ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Gordon Jago on from Dallas Cup. This interview was awesome to sit down with him. I actually sat across from him for the whole interview. It was an amazing experience. That's why the audio might be a little in flux because of how everything was set up. The images I am posting with our social media post for this episode, I took while I was in the office interviewing him. I hope you all will enjoy this episode. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Gordon Jago. I live here in Dallas. I've been in professional soccer all my life. I started as a young schoolboy in England and played in the district, the state, and eventually I played for England under 20s and then became a professional soccer player. I had 12 years with Charlton Athletic in the English First Division as a player. And then when I retired, I started coaching, went into an amateur team to get experience for a start. And then I was a head coach at Fulham Football Club in the British First Division. And then I came to America for a short spell for 2 years with the old North American Soccer League, with the Baltimore Bays, owned by the Baltimore Orioles Baseball Club. I had 2 years. Then I went back to England and became manager of Queen's Park Rangers in the English second division at that time, and I got them promoted to the Premier League, the first division. and then I left there off relegated, but to the third division. It was the first time in my life I'd ever been in the third, but it was all right. We got them out 1 year, got on promotion back into the second, and then I got an offer to come back to the United States to the Tampa Bay Rowdies as head coach in 78, and came over to Tampa and had up until 84, and then the league, outdoor league, was struggling a little bit, and I was going back to England again. And the Dallas Mavericks called me and said, we've just bought an indoor professional soccer team, the Dallas Sidekicks. Would you come and be head coach? I came to Dallas in 84 with the Dallas Sidekicks. It was difficult because it was a new team, lacked experience in terms of indoor soccer, as I did at that time. It's a different game entirely. We won our first championship in 87. And I won four more with the Sidekicks. And then I retired. And then I joined the Dallas Cup, the big youth international soccer tournament. And I had 12 years with them as the executive director. Then I retired from that, but they kept me on as a consultant and ambassador is the title. And now I go work in bringing in the top teams to the tournament from around the world. And so I get the opportunity. After all these years, I'm still involved. I get the opportunity to travel. I've been down to Australia and New Zealand to meet with their people because they all come at Easter and it's like an old boys reunion. They all say, when are you going to come and visit? Well, I do go and visit. But I've got further invitations to Spain, to Germany, which hopefully I'll take up again. But it's great. It keeps me active physically and mentally. And I enjoy it. As I said, it's an old boys reunion at Easter to see all the coaches and the referees, because we bring in referees from around the world, FIFA referees. And that's the secret of the Dallas Cup. Everything it does at top class. The organization is good. The fields are good. The referees are good. And the quality of the teams. And that's our biggest concern, because we take in now 200-odd teams, boys and girls, under 12 to under 19. And you don't want a team to come and lose heavily, because the winning team, they can win 5 or 6-0. And they then suddenly say, hold on, we spent all that money going to Tampa, to Dallas, and we didn't get a really competitive game. And that's no good to us. We have to be very careful in our selection process. We may make a mistake if we don't know a country. I've got a team coming next year from Liberia, and that'll be the first time where that happens. So that's going to be interesting. The president of Liberia was George Weah, who played professional soccer in England for Chelsea. And his boy, who is an American citizen, who was born here in the United States, he's playing for the national team at the moment, US national team. That'll be interesting because George will come to see his boy. And we'll certainly take him around and meet people. But it'd be interesting to see. And he wouldn't be bringing a team unless he thought it was competitive. So that's the biggest concern, that we want to be competitive for all teams. And we are, I think, we're well known throughout the world. As I say, you don't get under 500 applications unless you are known. And so we've a lot of people over the years, since 1980 when it started, have built the reputation as being one of the foremost international youth tournaments in the world, not only in the United States, but in the world. And as I say, we are very fortunate that the quality of teams we get are very attractive. And it's interesting when we notify a team that they're in the tournament, no matter what age, under 12, under 14, under 16, the coaches start calling me, and the first thing they ask, who's in our group, because they're in groups of four and they all want a foreign team. And so that's one of our aims. We try to put one foreign team from anywhere in the world in each of the four team brackets throughout the whole tournament. And that's been very successful. And as I say, it's interesting that a team from the United States definitely wants to play a foreign team. And that's understandable, because if you brought two teams from California, they probably played each other in California. So why come all the way to Dallas, spend all that money, time, and play somebody that's on your doorstep? So we worked very hard at bringing in international teams. We brought in 70 this year and 40 different countries. And we were able to put them into the brackets. And it's working, I shouldn't say, but I'm very proud to be associated with the tournament, because it is a good tournament. And the quality of the people that we get, as I said, the number of FIFA referees that come. And of course, we're not allowed to pay them, because they have to have a work permit. So they come and they're volunteers, and they'll referee games for me. Under 14 boys team suddenly got a FIFA referee. Oh, geez. And it's good. It maintains, as I said, the standards of the teams, organization, referees. It's now, as I say, we're well known throughout the whole world. We can't ask more than that. And to get that number of applications every year and have to be so selective, it's not very nice to say no to somebody, but we have to do that. For every one team last year, we said yes. We had to say it on no. And try and explain to them, and hopefully that they'll still be interested, still come again, that we can perhaps get them in a later year.
Now, my understanding, you have a unique history with the Dallas Cup. With after 9/11, this is when the Dallas Cup was strong all those years, 9/11 happened, and you were able to help rejuvenate, or however you would pronounce the word, yeah. Bring back the Dallas Cup to the prestigious level it was at prior to 9/11. So how has it been since then, and your role in that?
As I said, it was fortunate, because I resigned from the Sidekicks at that time. 9/11 had been, and it hurt the tournament. Teams didn't come. And when I came on board, we were $125,000 in arrears, losses. And we had not getting attractive teams weren't coming. 9/11, they stopped just travel, that's danger. And parents were concerned that their kid go on a trip and there'd been this problem with 9/11. Anyway, cut a long story short, I had the good fortune, I called Bobby Robson, who was the manager of Newcastle at that time, got him to agree to bring his team. And then he also said, because I'd been with Bobby at Fulham, he'd been a player under me as the coach. And he said, would you like to get Porto from Portugal? Because he'd been there. And so he arranged that. We had those teams come straight in. And also, I contacted Manchester United, who I knew Will McGuinness in charge of their academy. And he said, I could bring an under-12 team. I'll talk to Sir Alec Ferguson, the manager. He agreed, but we had to put the boys in a hotel, which, you know, with most under 12 teams would go in home stays. And that's, anyway, cut a long story short again. By getting those three teams coming in and putting it on our website, we were flooded with applications. So it all turned around in that 1 year, because we were able financially, we got two good sponsors that I got at that time to come in, and they gave us the financial monies that was needed, so we helped to clear our debts that way. And also we got teams suddenly said, hey, I can take my under 12 and play against Manchester United's under 12. So it was that 1 year, three teams coming in and two new sponsors all made it happen for me, and it just went on from there. And we were able, as I say, financially to get right. That was important. Because when I accepted, I was not aware that they were $125,000 in debt. I got the biggest shock ever when I first attended the first board meeting, and that news came out, and I thought, gee, how am I going to cover that? I was able to find sponsors, and Dr. Pepper came on board as well and became a title sponsor. It turned around very quickly, and so everybody was pleased, especially myself. It was a new experience for me. Great, because I was able to contact a lot of clubs that I'd been in touch with throughout my life, a soccer life, and they all most of them sent a team, so we had, as I say, real quality, and it certainly attracted, got us off to a very, very good start.
With such a rich history and players coming from all over the world, you must have had some phenomenal players you've been able to watch or grow.
Oh, David Beckham, of course, was outstanding. Michael Owen from that. And then there's many Italian top players who played here and came from internationals, went on to become international players. And as I say, I should know more now. I knew at one time a whole list. But I haven't had a look at that list lately, and my memory is not as good as I get older. No, we've had a lot of top players. John Evans, who's played for Manchester, he came over as a boy as well. Michael Owen, as I said, David Beckham. There was a whole list of the top players from around the world that have played here and as boys, young boys, and then went on to be very successful professional and international careers.
Just to have some of those names as part of your legacy is amazing, because to me, it's not a small tournament. It's a large tournament, but in the grand schemes of the football world, United States is not a heavy, in my mind, still not a heavy soccer developed country.
Oh, no. I mean, it's still, if you look back, I checked it out. It was about 1972 that youth soccer started to get developed, because there was the professional leagues and they knew that they had to go out and attract an audience. So they went out and they did it. And we did it with the Sidekicks when we first started, because it was indoor soccer in an arena downtown, not known. And we sent the players out everywhere. They were at camps, they were kids there. And so the children in Dallas got to know the Dallas Sidekicks players. And they were, and Tattoo is one of our most famous. He's only about 5'6". So the kids were on a level with height wise and knew him. And they went home after their camps or their meeting the players, and they convinced their parents to bring them to see the games. And that's how we built an audience. And interestingly, we went from the first year, 1,700 people average attendance, which was very low. And don't give Don Carter, the owner of the Mavericks, who owned us, credit. He stuck with us. And 3 years later, we're selling out 18,000. We won 4 championships. It was all done through the youth market, getting to know the players, the kids, wanting to see the players, wanting to come. We were successful on the field, which also helped. We got some very good players, and we had success. And so the Sidekicks had a really good, we had a very good 12 years with them in that respect.
And that gave you a lot, I guess that would give you a really good infuse into the communities then with the Dallas Cup coming over, not just your international connections, but your local connections working with the Sidekicks.
Well, and of course, the teams and the coaches, they knew of me because of being the pro head coach of the Dallas Sidekicks. And then all of a sudden, you're working with them. They knew you, they knew of you, and they didn't know you personally until they got involved. But at least they knew of me. I think I was fortunate they respected the job I'd done at the Sidekicks, and I think they appreciated what they saw happening or beginning to happen with the Dallas Cup. And as I said, now, 500 applications, you can't complain at that.
That's impressive.
And again, good standards. It's easier for me to go to a big club like Manchester United and say, will you send a team, whatever age, through their academies? And that helps, as I said, because there's no doubt about it. American youth soccer at the moment, for us, they want to play a foreign team.
Right.
They want to play. And that's good, because different styles, different standards, and it's something different for them. And if they do well and win, well, they've got bragging rights. So I've been very fortunate, and I'm still involved, which is very good for me. Keeps me active, keeps me interested. As I say, that every Easter, it's coaches, and many of them now have been, because it's been around since 1980, so that's 40-odd years. They were kids then, they're grown men now, and they're coaching, and they're coming back as a coach, as opposed to coming as a player initially. Yeah.
So looking at that aspect, now you're going full circle. You might have a third generation player.
Yes.
A player, a parent might have a third generation player that their parents played. They played, and now their kids are playing.
Yeah, could be. It's, as I say, it's a 45-year-old tournament. We brought a team from Israel in, was it, 2004, and there were 9 Palestinian and 9 Jewish boys under 12. And we worked hard, and because we were helping them to try and make the country right, and the prime minister at that time, Simon Peres, I'd been in an interview in England, and my friends got in touch with me because he had said he felt the only way they were going to get together, the two nations, was through education and sport. And so he'd opened 4 schools in Israel, and he had soccer teams, and they had this under 12 team. And we brought that under 12 team here in 2004. Now that's, they're now, they were 12. They're in their 20s now. At this moment, the Dallas Morning News reporter is trying to make contact with some of those boys who are now men in their 20s. What happened when they went back? Did they work at it? Are they still working at it? Or did they have nothing to do with it, trying to bring? Because it's still a major crisis out there at the moment, unfortunately. But it'll be interesting if she's Jeannie Miller with Channel 8. If she finds a couple of those boys and does an interview, it'll be a very, very interesting interview.
I can't imagine, because all the stories I hear about soccer and bringing communities together and bringing, it doesn't matter who you are, breaking language barriers, breaking social barriers. Yep. Everyone can communicate because the laws are the same no matter where you go.
It's, yeah. Well, again, it was interesting. Only one of the Palestinian boys spoke English. All the Jewish boys did. And they interviewed, it was Jeannie Miller, in fact, at Channel 8. She interviewed this one Palestinian boy, and they were, what we did, we put him in a homestay program. So there was a Jewish boy, an Israeli boy, sorry, a Palestinian boy, and an American boy, all the same age, 12 years of age, in the one house, in the American boy's house. And they would be looked after by that family for the whole week. They would take them players to the hotel where their coaches were each morning, and they would join and then play or travel, entertainment, whatever they were doing, play their games, train. And then at the end of the tour, they would all get together at the hotel. We'd have a bus for the team, and off they'd go to the airport and fly home. And I'll never forget the one sight of that under 12 group. There was the 3 boys that had been together for 10 days, under 12, Palestinian, Jewish, and American. And they were crying their eyes out. They'd been together for a week. And now they were having to say goodbye. They were, probably they were going back to Israel. So that alone says to me what the Dallas Cup's all about. It showed it all. It's a scene that I'll never forget. You see those 3 kids huddling, cuddling each other, crying their eyes out because they were parting for that moment. It's interesting whether they've continued, and I really should start to make some effort and find out, because there have been boys. I know there was one that came over and he stayed with a family way back 20 years or more, and he's still in contact. He's back in England. He's still in contact with them. And Mike Powers, one of my sidekicks players, he's coaching youth team. And they did a homestay. They brought a team from Manchester and had them with them. And then what happened when the Manchester team went back, they invited his team to go to Manchester and play in a tournament there and stayed in the Manchester kids' homes. So there must be many, many stories that we're not even aware of that bring together. It's not a soccer tournament only.
No.
It does so many other things.
It's bringing all these different communities around the world together. You talked about it a couple of times, and we talked about it before we started the interview. Where do these players stay when they come from other countries normally? Do they stay at hotels, or do they stay with
hosted
families?
It's a mixture. We've got 200-odd teams. We haven't got 200-odd teams that can take. And see, so what we do, we'll get an application from a country, from a team, and they'll say, can you help us financially? And if we can find an airline or a sponsor to help with their airfare, but then we'll say, okay, we'll put you in a homestay program, and you will stay with a Texas, Dallas, Texas boys team of the same age in the same tournament. They won't be in the same group, but they may meet later on in the tournament if they come through. But that way, we, and I think we did 32 teams this year, homestay. So there were 32 foreign teams that were able to come thanks to the goodness of the Dallas youth teams. And they're all ages. They're probably, we have probably more under 15s than under 16s this year from overseas. It was a bumpy year. But again, they stay here. And as I said, friendships are formed, lifelong friendships. Or in the instance of Mike Power's team, they got an invite to actually go to England and play in a tournament in Manchester and stay with the same boys they had entertained in the Dallas Cup in the early part of the year.
Just the friendships and the camaraderie they can build over the years sounds like it's a lifetime.
Yeah. Oh, as I said, there was a boy that came over, and he was at SMU at the time, and he's still in contact with the family. And now he's in his 30s, but he's still in contact with the family, and he's been over in England visiting them, and they've been over to the United States and stayed with him, all because it all started way back with the Dallas Cup.
I think that's so amazing. So you have this housing program. I've heard of it. I've had friends that have done it, and they always talk so highly of it and how much they hate when they leave, because
yes,
it's like losing their kid for...
That's right.
What because they become said? Part of the family, because they go watch them play. They participate. They are actively involved with them.
Yeah. And of course, the family have the two boys. So we always have two boys. FBI, they do home checks. Every one of those homes is checked because it's a concern.
Yeah.
If anything went wrong, geez, be tragic. We have one of our board members was a former FBI employee, and he gets the word. And we get a word back that Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, no reason why they're not to entertain. And it could be that perhaps the gentleman's have been drunk and driving. You know,
a simple background check.
And they don't want the father of the Dallas boy driving that visiting boy in his car if he has that problem. So it can be anything. But the FBI would not tell us rightly why. They would just say yes, no. And we do get some no. A good protective factor. It's not very nice, but it's good because it's safe.
Right. It's about keeping the players safe and why they're visiting, and making sure at the end of the day, you guys want to make sure your name is kept positive light.
If something happened to a boy, it would be disastrous.
Right.
And it can happen. It does happen, doesn't it? With youngsters being abused in various situations. No, it's... But again, it just shows you how well organized the Dallas Cup is.
Right.
That they have that availability of the FBI to check all the homestay people and make certain that welcoming a foreign boy. And of course, we only just started back with girls, and I don't think we're doing homestays at the moment with the girls. And that's probably a good thing at this moment, because that would be even worse if anybody was abused.
So looking at this, moving on from there, it's so you help them if it's a foreign country coming in, you try to help them come over to the States to help have housing. And do you guys do this for any of the domestic teams or just the internationals?
Only international homestays.
Okay.
We'll try and help, pardon me, if we've got a good sponsorship and we've got a particular team that's having problems financially to get here, airfares, etc., we'll try and help out there. When you have 250 teams, it's the team's responsibility in that respect. We will help, certainly, because, as I say, foreign teams are an attraction. There's nobody in this country does anywhere near the amount of youth foreign teams in a tournament that as the Dallas Cup does. So we are different, we're unique, and it's an attraction. And that's what makes the teams want to come here. And I say, it's interesting, Southern California is a real hotbed of soccer.
Yes.
Without a doubt. And we'll get 7 or 8 teams in the same age bracket apply. There's no way we would take 7 teams from that same area because they'd be playing each other. And as I just said earlier, why come all the way here and play a team from down the road? We have to say, be selective. And to be truthful, the way I do it in certain areas, I've got 4 coaches throughout Southern California that I know. And when I get the applications, I'll send the full list, say maybe 6 or 7, 8 teams that are all applied to that one age bracket. And the four fellas don't know if they know each other, but they don't know. And I say, rank them 1 through 6 or 1 through 8, whatever it is. And so I get 4 opinions. And so it's interesting. Often the same name is across the top. All 4 coaches today, that's the best team out of that 8. But again, it gives us a chance. It's not foolproof, but it gives us a chance to make certain that we maintain the best in the tournament. So if we have 4 teams from California in the 8 different age brackets, that's fine. But we don't want to put too many teams from one area of the country in the same age bracket.
I always joke, you travel from Dallas, Fort Worth, you go to Vegas or California, more than likely you're doing a team you could have played here in Dallas for half the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Or almost free.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's but again, it's interesting when you look at when you get the final lists of the teams, and we'll take 16 to 32 teams in an age bracket, and they're divided into groups of 4. That way, we can take the top 16 winner of each bracket into the final 16. If we need, we may say the best second team will go in. But that all depends. And if you get 32, well, that's it. You'd have 8 groups, and you can take 8 teams go through and 8 seconds. But it's interesting when you see the teams, and of course we know which teams or which clubs, because each team can change every year. You can have an under 14 team 1 year, the next year it's an under 15, and they've changed players. That club has changed players. So it doesn't mean just because they've been there once that they'll always come. We still want to be able to check that that team that year is of standard.
So how often do you have repeat teams coming in? Now, outside of the Metroplex, I feel like a lot of times you'll have, the Metroplex, you have a larger variety of teams.
Oh, quite a lot. California Surf, for example, they send teams every year. They're a great club, have good standards. And of course, sometimes you get a team that comes at under 12 and they'll come back at under 14. May have changed a little, 1 or 2 players change. That's when you get a reputation of being a good club in other parts of the United States, then they're going to get their invitations or their applications accepted.
So roughly, now looking at this from the DFW Metroplex side, how many teams do you take locally?
We take teams from the Classic League. Usually, at the moment, I think it's 1. The winners of the Classic League, each age bracket, is automatically in. If we are short of teams in an age bracket, we may drop down to 2. From one age bracket. Then we also, there are tournaments. FC Dallas has a tournament, and we'll take the winners of their tournaments in 2, so that, because they help us with the fields and such. So we work together, and it gives us an opportunity to have the best Dallas teams in the tournament. That helps us with attendances as well, because it's been incredible. We had as many as 5,000 people out at one of the complexes. We had to have police and everything to take care of parking and goodness knows what. But it just shows you the interest of the locals that their kids are playing, and they're going to play in the Dallas Cup, and they're going to play against a team from another country or another state. It all builds up that reputation and momentum to make the tournament really something. And the finals up at FC Dallas, They were very well attended. They attended 11,000 most of those games for the finals. The atmosphere is excellent, and I mean, it makes it for a kid. The other part of Dallas comes and plays at FC Dallas, the professional team's ground, big stadium. He's in the locker room. He marches out. They play the national anthem. So it's a wonderful day for those kids, and it's a memory that will live with them forevermore. And that's all down to, as I say, 1980 when it was started, and a lot of good people have been with the tournament 10, 20 years and still with it, working. And we have 32 committees that work. I have two committees of one person, and one does all the flags. Just before the tournament starts, I send him a list of the countries that are coming. Don't see him, but when I get to all the venues, the flags of those countries are flying. He gets the flags and put up and such. Another one, he says, how many brackets have you got? How many championships? And I said, I've got under 12, I've got 8. Don't see him. Finals day, just before half time, out he comes, the table, trophies, medals, all there. He just and does it every year. And I just give him the 8 brackets, and that's the end of it. And then they are. And what he does also, on the Friday when we get the semis, we have the 4 semifinalists. He will have plates made of each one as a winner, as a finalist. And so just before the game ends, he's down there by on that table with the trophy, and he's got the plaque. He's got the plate, and he's literally screwing the plate on the trophy as the winner of the tournament and the other one as the finalist.
It's amazing.
And it's amazing. So when I or one of our committee members present the trophy, it's on there already. And I did it last year, and it was the under-16s. And I did the losers first, of course, gave them their medals and also their trophy. And then I went and got the winner's trophy. And, of course, as I'm passing, this little boy, under-16, he sees the name of the other team winners. And he said, it's a fix. It's a fix. He was got all the nine. So I went up to his coach quickly and I said, tell him how we do it. I said, and I'll tell you what, I'll find the plate for your team as the winners. You weren't the winners because your trophy says finalist. But I'll find the plate because we throw them away then. That one person, that committee member, has been doing it for years. The one who puts the flags, doing it for years. It's just wonderful. They're voluntary. Nobody gets paid. And they make that tournament what it is. Yeah. And then there must be so many other interesting stories of relationships and happenings over the years. Yeah.
32 committees, and they are the ones that make this That's all right. work.
Yeah.
I remember last year I went up to the hotel, Westin Hotel, last year and got my media credentials. And yeah. That place was buzzing.
Yeah. That's the headquarter hotel at the moment. And so everything goes there. The office, the Dallas Cup office, literally moves into the hotel a week before the tournament. And everything's done at that hotel. And the social activities, we have a casino night on a Thursday for the referees and the volunteers. We bring a company in and they have all these gambling things. And what we do, we give each person $2,000 worth of gambling chips. And they gamble all night. At the end of the night, they turn their chips back, what they've got, and we give them vouchers for raffle tickets. And then we have about 40 prizes, from a computer to a soccer ball, autographed shirts from Manchester or Brazil, whatever. And they then have these raffle tickets, and they put them into the jars if they want to try and win. So consequently, then we make the draw, and someone goes home with a prize. And that's another part of the social activities. The referees have a party on the Tuesday night with music, dancing, because we have women referees as well. That's a nice social act. Because, as I said, we're not allowed to pay overseas referees. So they come in, what we do, we try to entertain them and make their week as interested as possible. We may take them out to the Cowboys Stadium in the week, and they get a tour around the stadium and see the stadium. And it's all done by these committees. So they volunteer, and many of them take the week off from work, literally, to make certain they're doing everything. And it all helps us to provide everybody with an enjoyable time with the tournament.
Now, I'm a parent, so I have the perspective of officials.
Yeah.
It's not always the greatest thing, but from the sounds of it, you guys bring in very high-level officials from out of town, from out of countries. You said FIFA refs. And now, how do you select? Because you can only bring so many in because of the cost of it. And then how many refs do you have locally? Are they volunteering their time also, or are they paid?
No, all American referees, local or in our states, are paid. That's part of our budget, and they get a fee for refereeing. Let's say the foreign ones are not allowed because they don't have work permits, but we make that trip really enjoyable. And of course, same thing. We've got a group of referees coming from England. There's about eight of them. And they've been coming for years and years. And they stay with the same family here in Dallas. They're friends for the family, and they stay that way. Or if they come to us, we'll put them in a hotel and pay for their full board. Because, as I say, you're not allowed to pay them. So do it that way. But an American referee, no. They make their own arrangements. They have hotels that we book them for, and they get paid their fee, their referee fee. But the quality of referees, the number of FIFA referees that we have is incredible. And of course, they're proud. They wear their FIFA badge. Right. And the little boys, they see that badge, and they go, oh. And again, it's good. England, the FA, they send me eight referees, and they pick up the tab for everything. And they're all young, and they're boys and girls referees. They send them to us for experience, because refereeing a Mexican player, it can be different to a European player. Different personalities, different characters, different behavior. So they send them over, and they gain experience for when they go back to England or wherever they come from.
So with the local refs, do you have a selection committee for them, how they get picked? And so you're getting the cream of the crop, so to speak, for the players. Well, for the referee, sorry.
Again, that's so important, because if you don't get a good referee and it doesn't do a good job, it reflects on the tournament. And we get irate parents, irrespective. Sometimes they're too critical sometimes. But in general, that's one of the things that I said helps the Dallas Cup. Everything is top class. And those FIFA referees are top class. And they give their time. All right, they get paid, the locals or American referees.
The domestic.
The foreign referees. They treat that as a vacation, because they come every year. They get the social side of it that we provide. And then they stay with a American family that they've got to know over the years. It's just a bonus all around, plus, plus, plus. Yeah.
So we talked about it. So what fields do you all use when doing the tournament?
We use all the complexes, the soccer complex, Shin College there. We use FC Dallas. FC Dallas are terrific because they give us all their fields. And they've got about 20 up there in Frisco. And then they give us the final. We have the semis and the finals. As I said, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at the end of the tournament, all those games are played up there. So they have a tournament in the sometime during the year, and the winners of each of their age brackets, that's a benefit. The winners are invited into the Dallas Cup. So they enter those tournaments on the hope that they get the invite. Because, as I said, 252 yeses and 252 noes.
So you have the Dallas Fields Richland College. I know your big day, the opening ceremonies, is held at the Cotton Bowl.
Yep.
And I know it's quite the spectacular event going on there. I've seen photos and pictures from over the years. I've tried going last year and I just had a work conflict.
Oh, look at the one behind you. It shows it all.
Right?
That's the Cop Bowl.
I'll take a picture of that and share it in the interview.
There's a big audience there that people come. And let's say we give a lot of tickets to the Dallas School District to give out to kids and their families to come as our guests, because Cotton Bowl's 100,000 people.
It's hard to fill.
But we'll put 20-odd thousand on opening day. Yeah. I mean, that's a youthful one. It's all pluses, and that photograph there certainly shows the Dallas Cup, what it's all about.
Do you start or end on Easter?
Yes.
Which way does it go? Because I never keep it straight.
We start the beginning of Easter and finish Easter weekend.
Easter weekend.
And the reason we do that is because overseas, that's when the schools are on vacation. So the kids can come out of school and come across to the United States and play in the tournament because they're on their school holiday. They're not having to take time away from their school.
Their studies. That's so cool. Now, as we look at this as a whole, what has been the greatest influence to keeping this going? Is it the community? Is it your sponsors? Is it the volunteers? I know you guys do a great job with all your volunteers every year. I see it on your social media.
I think you have to give great credit to the Dallas Cup Board of Directors, whoever is the executive director and the board, because they're the ones that set the pattern. And as I say, I think there are 12 members on the board. They have 4 full-time employees, including the executive director. They make it all happen because, as I said, they've been around for 20 years, some of them, still on board. And last week, in fact, we lost one of the ladies. She was one of our major committee people, and unfortunately she died. But she had been with the tournament 18, 20 years. Incredible. Yeah. Because they enjoy it.
Right.
They enjoy it as well. So it's not a hardship, it's a pleasure. As I say, often, I don't know how many, but it must be many, 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 they've gone backwards and forwards. They've gone to other countries, or those people have come and visited after the tournament for a vacation with the people. The friendships that have been built over the years, just incredible.
Yeah. It doesn't just sound like it's the soccer. It is.
It's not.
It's the community that's invested in it.
Yeah. It's an international event that brings together people from all over the world with a common cause to enjoy soccer. And the friendships that they build and the pleasure that they get and the development that they get. A lot of those young boys, as I said, they come across as boys. They're already on their way. They go on to have very successful professional and international soccer careers. Beckhams, Owens,
right,
and such. Many, many. Yeah. I wish I did a program. It's all listed. It lists all these players over the years. And I think it's 3 or 4 pages of players from other countries that have gone back, having played in the Dallas Cup as a kid, to become a full professional later on in life.
That's so amazing. Yes. I get a lot of those every day.
Yeah.
It's so amazing to me. Sitting here listening to you talk and talking about the Dallas Cup, to me, it gives me goosebumps and gives me the cold chills, because to me, this is what the game's about. It's not just being on the pitch. It's what's happening on the sidelines. It's what's happening in the homes and in the community to make everything so much better.
It's interesting. It's the top teams that come, those that are known, like Manchester United or Barcelona or Chivas, whatever, a lot of them help us. They go into the schools, they go into the hospitals whilst they're here. It's all organized, and they will take a team into a hospital, to the children's ward. They may bring badges or things from their club, photographs of their team, profession, and they go around the hospital beds meeting the kids. And it's just another unknown. Very few people know that. And we don't go out of our way to say, well, look at this, how good we are. No, we just do it because we know we have contacts in those places, in those hospitals or in those schools, and we have a contact with our board. And so they say to Manchester United, oh, when you come over, would you like to go to one of the schools and visit and see? They do, because the coaches of the teams think, hey, that's another good thing. We're taking our youngsters of age 12 up to 18 into a foreign country. They're going to go into a foreign school and sit in the classroom and see how it works in their in that instant that they're here. And we do what we call certain teams will do hospital visits and school visits.
I love it. So we'll run through this really quickly because I'll wrap this up with you. So what is the dates? So we already have the date. So it's set every year. So it's the week of Easter.
Yes.
We play all over the Metroplex, sounds like. And the housing is twofold. It's host housing and hotels, depending on where they're coming from and what's going on. And how can they find your information and where can they go to find anything about the Dallas
Cup? Well, go on to the website, dallascup.org, and it's all there. It tells you the past, you know, what's happened in the past, who's won, done. It's very, very informative. And then, of course, it gives you all the details of the tournament because that's how the teams make their application, through the internet. Anybody, as I say, if they want to know anything about the Dallas Cup, just go on dallascup.org. It's there. The history's there. The upcoming tournament is there. How to get tickets if you want to go to the Cotton Bowl, where the games are being played. The schedules are there. So they can see that out at Frisco on the Monday afternoon or Monday, this game's going on all day long. They can see who's playing, take their pick if they want to go and see certain teams. And again, the soccer community of Dallas, they've got to know who the best teams in the soccer world are. So if they see São Paulo, Brazil playing at Richardson, they'll go out and they'll see it there. So no, anybody wants any information, that's everything is on that website about the past, the history, the present, and the future. It's all there for them to see and get all the information they want. And then, of course, you can go on and there's the office, there's telephone numbers to call for information, and they make people aware. And that's why, as I say, we're very fortunate, we're very successful. It's been built 40-odd years.
Right.
That's a hell of a time. It started in 1980, and just Bill Strube started it with Ron Griffith, and it's just taken off. And it is where it is. It's one of the best, I won't say best, but it's one of the top tournaments in the United States, and if not the world.
And that's how I view it. I mean, I view it as one of the top. I call it the oldest, longest international youth tournament, probably one of the only ones in the United States, I think. I haven't found much.
Oh, I think so. I don't. There may have been something up on in the early days on the East Coast.
But nothing.
Now, there's a good tournaments now. Disney has one.
Yes, they have.
But Disney, and a lot of them, one up in Cleveland, they've all copied the Dallas Cup. They've sent people to come to the Dallas Cup for the week to take notes, see what we don't do. And then they've gone back and they've organized their own tournaments. And that's good because it spreads the game.
Yes.
And now we've got a very successful professional men's soccer league and women's. And women are number one in the world of women's soccer. The colleges have got good soccer programs. They offer scholarships. So it's all, and really, as I said, I checked out and it looked around about 1972 with the professional teams starting to get involved with local youth. And that's how it's spread.
My favorite question to ask, and I don't even know where to go with this question because I always ask, because you have such a rich history with football. And it's because you've played, you've coached, and now you're part of this great organization. So I'm going to have to ask it in those three folds. So who has been the greatest influence on you as a player? It can be anyone. I don't care if it's a parent, a coach, or a former player, a teammate. Same thing as a coach. Who is the greatest influence on you as a coach? And who has been the greatest influence on this chapter of your life of working with the Dallas Cup?
The chapter in the professional soccer world, without a doubt, two people. Walter Winterbottom, who was the England national team manager and head of the coaching, and Ron Greenwood, played for Fulham. I played against him, and he was a top manager as well. Those two men were very much the instrumental in my beginning. If I, as a coach, met them through playing against Ron, and then, of course, he said to me, there's a course at Arsenal Football Club on a Monday afternoon. Go along and see it. I went along, got involved in coaching, and then I met Walter Winterbottom because he was the head of all of it and the head of the national team. And that those two have been there all my life. I could call them whenever I had a problem or I needed advice or I needed something. They were always there. So those two certainly in my professional career had the most to do. It's interesting, I got the opportunity to write a book a few years ago. It's called Soccer Pioneer. And I wrote this. I didn't want to do it. I said, I've been away from England. It was an English company. Anyway, they sent a ghostwriter from Manchester, and he spent 10 days with me with his tape recorder, asking question after question. And then he went back and produced it. And, of course, the most interesting is along the lines of what you've just asked. I was a professional at Charlton Athletic Football Club for 12 years, from 17 onwards. I probably learnt what not to do at Cheltenham. Had a staff that really were old-aged in respect to attitude to the game. And I went away on these courses, and I went to European courses that they sent me to. And I saw top coaches from around the world working, and it was a whole different game to the one I had experienced as a professional at Cheltenham Athletic. All we did was run. And I remember a story. And I said, can't we have a soccer ball? Oh, if you have a soccer ball in the week, you won't want it on Saturday. Can you imagine that? You won't want it on Saturday. I told us, I don't know if I wrote it in the book. I can't recall it. But we used to run around the track of the ground. And the coach would stand in the middle of the field. He was overweight. And he put his five fingers up. That meant you ran around five times. Or he put his finger up once and you ran around once. I was doing it one day and I was a good runner. I was very slim. I wasn't very heavy and long-legged. And I could run. I was a good quarter miler. Anyway, I'm running and, of course, I'm going too fast for the rest of the group. There were four groups around the pitch. And I'm going too fast. Come back, Jago, come back. Where are you going, Jago? What are you trying to do? And so I dropped back into the pack and just run within myself. So it really wasn't doing me any good at all. Anyway, I remember this particular day I'd been away in Europe and seen these coaches working, and I came back now still playing. So I wasn't coaching a team at that time. I used to be coaching other coaches and such. But anyway, I'm running around the track and I stopped. And I walked right across the field, and he was standing right in the middle on the center circle. Jack, his name was, and I walked by and I said, Jack, you could train a chimpanzee to do your job, and carried on walking. went in the locker room, showered. They were still out there, showered, dressed, went home. So I said to my wife, I'd get a call this afternoon. And there was no telephone call. I thought the manager would call me, you see. So I went in the next day, and I thought, I'll be asked to go and see the manager in his office. Nothing. He never said a word. Never said a word. And so what I learned at Cheltenham was what not to do, because that was old age. Then meeting Walter Winterbottom, Ron Greenwood, Ron first, and then Walter, and going away and seeing other countries and top coaches from around the world and top coaches in England working. And then they made me coach of the under-17 national team for a period. So I got that opportunity as a coach as well. And I've just been fortunate all my life. I've been able to, and I got interns at Dallas Cup from Texas A&M, from their sports marketing. And we have them come in January, and they'll stay till May. So they have, and then we show them how we do sponsors, the tournament. The interesting thing has been that for me, I get this opportunity to see. So they asked me to go, the professor at the college asked me to go and speak to this particular group. They were just graduating. And I thought, what the hell do I talk about? Anyway, I came up with enjoyment of profession. And that was the whole key. And that opens up the book, that first chapter, enjoyment of profession. And I said to these, there were about 20 of them in this group, and they're all in their early 20s. And I said, okay, you're going out of college now. You're going out into the wide, wide world. I'll give you this advice. Take it or leave it. Go and get a job that you enjoy. I said, now, that doesn't mean you're going to enjoy every day, because you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. I said, but get something that really interests you. I said, my father worked for the same company, an engineering company, for 50 years. Hated Monday mornings, couldn't wait for Friday, because he'd be out the 2 days off. I said, and then he retired, got a gold watch, oh, very nice, 50 years, gold watch. And he retired at 65, and he lived till he was 79. So I said, he had 14 years as a retiree. I said, unfortunately, my sister and myself were able to make financially good for them, and they had a good life. I said, but what a terrible ratio. 50 years, hate Monday, can't wait till Friday. 14 years, they traveled the world. They came to the United States to visit. I said, because I wanted him to enjoy life. I said, so when you go out of here next week or next month, whenever it is, try and find a job that you enjoy. I said, now, if you want money and you want a Mercedes in the garage and a nice big house with a swimming pool and an Armani suit, if that's what you want, go for it. I said, but there's a lot more in life than finance. I said, and to me, if you get up in the morning within reason and you look forward to going to work, and I said, that's a big plus. And I've had that all my life, and I'm still doing it. I said, so that's my good fortune. So if you get a job and you don't enjoy it, I said, how many of you are married? There were 3 out of 20 married. I said, okay, the rest of you are single. You've only got yourself to worry about. So if you don't like the job, leave it. Go and do another one. I said, if you don't like that, leave that. I said, but if you get the 3, you better start looking at yourself. Maybe you that's wrong, not the environment. I've had emails years afterwards from some of those who were in that group who said, thank you for that advice. I was able to take it. I've found a job that I'm enjoying. And that was it. And that's been my good fortune that I have been in. And when I left school, I went to college, I graduated, and I became a telecommunications engineer. My father said, hey, you're enjoying soccer, but it could be as a professional. You may not make it. You may have an injury. Get your profession. So I became a telecommunications engineer, and I played part-time. Then when I got to the age, the manager said, hey, you won't make the first team as a part-time. You've got to come full-time. So I left the job, went full-time. But if it had gone wrong, I could have gone back. But I did, took my dad's advice. As I say, here I am, my old age, still enjoying it. I'm very fortunate. Travel the world, still enjoy soccer, still get involved with the Dallas Cup and such. No coaching now. I've had that. That's over. That period's done. That's it. To any youngster, get enjoyment of profession. Find something that you really like and you enjoy. You won't have everyday roses, but at least you're doing something that you're enjoying and you'll get pleasure out of life.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Gordon was awesome. I feel like I've been very lucky to sit down with this man and hear what he has done in his life, what he has done with Dallas Cup, shared what Dallas Cup is doing. There is so much going on with the Dallas Cup. If you're not following it, there's the whole girl side that just got expanded this year since I actually recorded this. If that gives you any idea how long I have had this recording for. But Dallas Cup starts in a few weeks. And if you have not seen it, I would recommend going out and watching a match or two. You have teams from all over the country and all over the world. And it's a great opportunity to see some great soccer, youth soccer, and bring your kids, bring whoever that loves soccer. You're going to catch some great matches. And I would hope you all will go out and support the Dallas Cup, support what they're trying to do. If you're a local business, find a way to help them. I'm telling you, this is one of the best things for our community here. And it brings in so many great and wonderful, talented players. And such great experience for our youth soccer players here that are able to participate. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.